Take a second. What comes to mind when you think about vanilla? Perhaps ice cream, or liquor, or cake. The warm, gentle flavor is ubiquitous in homes and grocery stores in many countries. But for most farmers in northeastern Madagascar, vanilla is their primary source of income, and that income can fluctuate wildly. At the time of this podcast, in 2018, 1 kilogram of vanilla is worth more than $600, which is higher than the price of silver.
Why is this happening? What is vanilla? And how has the vanilla market impacted people in Madagascar?
From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College.
This is.
This is.
This is.
This is War News Radio.
Hello, this is War News Radio. I'm Kyle Richmond Crossing.
And I'm Serena Song Clark. We're going to talk about vanilla. This story will take us to a region in northeast Madagascar, in an area just under the size of Massachusetts with about a tenth as many people, called Saba. Over 80% of the world's vanilla is grown in Saba, and livelihoods here depend a lot on vanilla, and large global changes in the vanilla market have stirred conflict there in recent years. We'll hear from two experts, a graduate student and a visual journalist, and explore why we should care about how this delicious, ubiquitous substance is produced.
In order to understand the complexities of the vanilla market, we needed to first understand the vanilla plant itself and how it is grown in Madagascar. Unfortunately, we couldn't travel to see it for ourselves. But we did the next best thing, find someone who had, and interview them. Meet Finbar O'Reilly.
I'm Finbar O'Reilly. I'm an independent photographer, and I work for various clients, including the New York Times.
We found Finbar because one of his pieces for the New York Times was an article and accompanying photos about vanilla in northeastern Madagascar.
I have a friend who works for Human Rights Watch in Madagascar, or he used to, and we were talking about story ideas, and he mentioned a few human rights-related issues to me, and I started looking around, and I actually stumbled across this issue of vanilla production in the northeast corner of Madagascar, and there had been some local newspaper reports, and a South African newspaper had done something on it.
Stop here to clarify. Vanilla is a term used to describe more than 100 species of vines in the orchid family. Vanilla planifolia, the species grown in northeastern Madagascar, is well known for its high concentration of vanillin, the organic compound that gives vanilla its distinct flavor. In this podcast, we'll refer to vanilla planifolia as just plain vanilla. The vanilla plant is a lush green vine with yellow flowers that blooms only once per year for a single day.
So I went to the very source of it, and you've got the farmers who have to grow this stuff. As I said, very labor intensive. It takes a couple of years. They fertilize the orchid usually around this time of year, October, November. Then they have to wait about 8 months, 9 months for it to be mature.
Finbar is saying that vanilla farmers have to wait several years for a vanilla plant to mature. Then they have a single day to hand pollinate all the flowers. Then they have to wait the better part of a year until the pods develop and mature.
And then they have to sell it on to the middlemen because they don't have really access often to the exporters. So each link in the supply chain is vital to the other, and each link is trying to earn a living, make a profit, and do a business. And so all these farmers who have their own small little farms, some the size of a football field, some larger, some the size of a tennis court, they have to protect these little clusters of vanilla that grow and that are very labor intensive to produce. It can take a couple of years for a vanilla vine to actually produce pods that can be harvested. So these farmers can wait several years for their crops to be ripe, and then if thieves swoop in and steal their crops before they can cultivate them, that means that years and years of work is gone, and it's a real problem for them.
The vanilla crop is very fragile, and that makes the market more unstable.
For vanilla farmers in Saba, livelihoods depend on two main things: weather and global speculation. Cyclone seasons, including a particular serious 2014 and 2015 season, can destroy vanilla crops, resulting in vanilla being more rare, but also much more valuable. But the weather is not the only factor that affects the vanilla market.
Finbar told us how the vanilla market has changed recently.
But what most of us don't know, and I didn't know until I stumbled across this issue, is that there's been a real increase in the price of vanilla over the last 5 years due to global market forces, as well as cyclones that have wiped out crops, creating a shortage, and also a general move towards the desire for natural ingredients rather than synthetic ingredients. And what this means is that farmers in that region have to deal with the problem of theft, because vanilla is suddenly worth as much as silver per kilo, which is pretty remarkable, really, when you think about it. 1 kilo of vanilla costs about $600.
It hasn't always been this way. Vanilla was native to Mexico and was introduced to Madagascar by French colonizers in the mid-19th century.
So initially, during the colonial period, and for a long time afterwards, the price of green vanilla, so the price farmers got for their crop, was set by the government, was set either by the colonial regime or the Malagasy government.
This is Anna Ju. Anna is doing her PhD on conservation and development in Madagascar at UC Berkeley.
Anna described how the structure of the vanilla market has changed post-colonialism.
And then in the 1990s, the World Bank basically said the vanilla market needs to be liberalized and the price setting needs to stop. And they successfully ended price setting toward the late 1990s. And then in 2000, there was a cyclone that came and devastated most of the prime vanilla territory in northeastern Madagascar. And so that made the price shoot up to levels that it had never been before. And because there was no price setting going on at the local level, local prices got, I mean, enormous, way, way bigger than they had ever historically been.
The vanilla market is extremely important for farmers in Madagascar.
Vanilla, as you are very well aware, is this lucrative cash crop, and in recent years, a very lucrative cash crop. And cash crops in general have been promoted by some as a means by which poor farmers can increase their incomes and like move away from subsistence farming. And they maybe some people would even point to the vanilla industry as an example of a successful cash crop. How do you square the narrative of economic empowerment and generation of wealth with the realities of the vanilla market in Madagascar that you saw?
I would say that many Malagasy farmers, I mean, all Malagasy farmers, most of their... all their money comes from vanilla for the most part, from cash crops for sure. That's where their money comes from. And it's definitely a source of development. It provides, even during the best time, it provides extra cash to buy needs that supplement a subsistence lifestyle. But at the same time, it's the variability of the price and the boom and bust cycle that really is problematic and not helpful.
Considering how important vanilla is for the farmers, you would think that they would have systems in place to save what they get during the booms to get them through the busts. But Anna says that most of the money that farmers make disappears within 6 months of earning it. The direct cause of this is what Malagasy people refer to as vulu mafana, or hot money spending.
Anna has seen many types of hot money spending that would strike most of us as ridiculous. Here's a good example.
I think the one that sticks in my head the most is someone was telling me when he was younger, during the vanilla boom of 2000, he saw a farmer like pasting money to the side of a chameleon. Just pasting his money to the side of a chameleon because he didn't really have anything better to do with it in his mind, or I'm not really sure why. It doesn't make any sense.
Anna witnessed men stepping on people's feet with brand new shoes, and then claiming that it wasn't them, but the money stepping on their feet. People went to fairs and would spend an inordinate amount of money on the ring tosses, only to deliberately miss them all.
It might be easy to dismiss these stories as symptomatic of a culture of excess, but both Anna and Finbar point to structural issues that are at the heart of hot money spending.
For one, the Sava region of Madagascar is very, very rural.
There aren't banks around for these farmers to be using. In order to access a bank, they have to go into the town, and it takes a day or a couple of days by foot, or sometimes on a canoe even. And it's a big risk to carry a bunch of money on that trip to take it to the bank. I never use banks. There's no history of using banks for vanilla farmers because there's no history of having an excess of money.
Without a safe place like a bank to store money, many Malagasy farmers come to the reasonable conclusion that spending the money, even in silly ways, is less risky than saving.
Another reason why hot money spending is so common is probably familiar to everyone listening. Peer pressure.
And what the money does get spent because of security, but also because there are social pressures to keep up. So everybody wants just like here where we live, people want the latest mobile phone or the latest fashions and so on. In Madagascar, there are certainly in this region in Sava, what people aspire to is to have electricity, to have a TV, to have a satellite dish, to have a metal roof on their house rather than a thatched roof.
Right.
And so these are the things that people tend to spend their money on initially. And there's no mains electricity, so people buy either generators or solar panels to power their lights. And so once that's happened, people then start to buy other luxuries like stereo systems, TVs, and the satellite dishes. And they start building their homes. They improve their homes from the ones that are made from bamboo and banana leaves. And then if they get past that stage, often what people end up doing is buying things like motorbikes or cars if they're moving well up the scale. But oftentimes this money gets spent on these things, and they'll buy motorcycles and they'll buy cars. But then when the lean season comes around, they don't have fuel for those vehicles, or they don't have money to maintain the solar panels and so on.
Without banks or other ways to safely store wealth, some farmers have done the next best thing: invested in themselves and their homes. But this doesn't explain some of the more extreme cases that Anna described.
How can you explain a farmer pasting money on a chameleon?
Well, it might be helpful to remember when these boom and bust cycles started happening.
And then in the 1990s, the World Bank basically said the vanilla market needs to be liberalized and the price setting needs to stop.
It was only after these neoliberal free market reforms that the vanilla boom and bust cycle was really apparent in Madagascar. So that's what Anna means when she says this.
There's no history of using banks for vanilla farmers because there's no history of having an excess of money. There's just no system locally to deal with that variation. So farmers are coming up with creative ways of dealing with it themselves. And I think if any like real development is to happen beyond just meeting basic needs, then there has to be some institution for dealing with this abundance. This abundance that happens during the boom time. But it's very difficult to develop that institutional framework, because the booms, there's been two big vanilla booms since 2000. And they're momentary, they're fleeting. This one will probably last a year more, if that.
One thing Anna said I found particularly interesting.
So farmers are coming up with creative ways of dealing with it themselves.
These farmers are in kind of an impossible situation. The price of their crop fluctuates wildly based on the intensity of cyclones and how much people like me care about natural vanilla, two things they definitely can't control. Then, during these boom times that are impossible to predict, they're given incredible sums of money that they can't even keep safely.
If I were a farmer in Madagascar, I think I'd feel really out of control.
Exactly. And so what Anna is getting at, I think, is that farmers are responding to the unpredictable, almost magical forces of globalization and climate change with actions that match the unpredictability and magicality of the situation they're in.
That's really interesting. I think what we might see as wasting money is really just a creative way of exerting some autonomy and control over a situation that feels hopelessly out of control.
I think it's important to understand that while hot money spending might be a reasonable and even effective response to the whims of the vanilla market, we don't want to overlook the consequences of the boom and bust cycle.
That's a great point. In the boom cycles, the vanilla farmers have plenty of money, but without savings, the bust cycles can be devastating.
And there's also a psychological element to the extreme volatility and wealth in Sava.
One of the things I encountered while I was there were I went to a small school up in the mountains, attached, you know, roof school. And while I was there, these young teenage girls started having semi-seizures and fits. And I didn't really know if it was because I was there and they were just acting up. But one after another went into these kind of trances and seizure-like states and had to be, you know, massaged, cap-caught and massaged and had chili water sprinkled on their faces to bring them out of it. And I just didn't know what was happening. What I discovered is this is a fairly common phenomenon in societies under extreme stress. It's happened in Malaysia, Nepal, Mexico, and other places. Usually among teenage girls where there's a lot of pressure, social pressure on them. And in Madagascar, that pressure is the pressure for them to marry young. There's a lot of child marriage in Madagascar. It's one of the countries with the worst records of child marriage. And the money surrounding the vanilla trade means that girls who are at school might be under pressure to leave school and to marry into families that have made money from vanilla in order to support their extended families.
Between this, the hot money spending and crime, vanilla seems to be exacting a psychological toll on the people of Sava.
I think there is... In the hot money spending, there are these funny sides to the stories, and then it's a deeper, like, traumatic side, in that it does make people, at least there are stories in which it makes people go crazy, seeing all this money, they just effectively go crazy. I mean, that's what the legends are about this hot money, so it's had a big impact in the region in terms of, like, just sending a huge amount of paper money in a place that doesn't deal with paper money, is a largely subsistence-based economy and has no channels for funneling that money into productive outlets. And it's really a shame.
So here's my question after all this. We've heard the story, and I don't really know what to do with this knowledge, besides thinking more about addressing the structural problems. We know that market forces and globalization produce all sorts of issues. There are problems with the production of chocolate, phone parts, palm oil, and now vanilla, just to name a few.
Right. I think there's something to be said about reducing consumption in general. Take, for instance, the cobalt trade. Cobalt is found in phone batteries, and its production is fueling conflict in the mining areas in Central Africa. We live in a world where we're pretty dependent on phones, but we also don't need a new one every year, and so that's something we can cut down on a little.
But for such a common product like vanilla, it's difficult to do. And I don't think a boycott of natural vanilla would even be ideal. 80,000 farmers in Madagascar rely on the vanilla for their livelihoods. Fully replacing natural vanilla with synthetic vanilla without some large change in the economy of Sava would destroy it entirely. The problem is not in the production itself, but the systems around it, the dependency of farmers on middlemen, the lack of a banking system in the rural areas, and perhaps most importantly, the structure of the vanilla market itself.
For me, the most important takeaway has been the fact that the free market, which is supposedly this rational force, manifests in a globalized world in ways that can really feel irrational and even kind of magical, especially to those without power. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. This piece was produced by Kyle Richmond-Crossett, Shiloh Sumandaran, Julianne Ding, and myself, Serena Sung Clark. If you want to hear more pieces from us, find us on Facebook or visit our website at warnewsradio.org. Thank you for listening.